Larry Nichols is an individual who has just had such an amazing life. You know, he was with the Mujahideen for 2 years in Afghanistan doing some interesting work. He's going to talk about that later. He talked to Nouri al-Maliki, the prime minister of Iran, a while back during the attempted Gulf of Tonkin 2 they tried to stage with those fake radio transmissions. The media later admitted they were fake. It was a fraud that the Iranians didn't threaten to blow up the ships, just made up. And we're going to have him talk about that later in the second half of this hour. But he is credited with releasing the majority of the scandals about Bill Clinton, helping to put together the Clinton Chronicles and Clinton Circle of Power. He worked with the Clintons. But so people get an idea of who you are, Larry, go back to the work you did in the government. Then when you got to know the Clintons there in Arkansas, you know who Larry Nichols is. I know you don't like to talk about yourself, but do that for us, Larry.
Well, Alex, first off, thank you for having me on. And I apologize for not being on with you for a few years. But for years, I worked for the government. I was with the Contras in Nicaragua, Afghanistan. Then I got in with the Stevens Group in Arkansas, which is the largest investment group outside of Wall Street.
Well, let's go back, though. Let's go back to, because, Larry, you haven't talked a lot about, now, who were you working for back when you were in Afghanistan and Nicaragua?
The CIA.
And what was your position there?
Well, you trained. Trained people. Trained fighters.
When were you first recruited into CIA?
From Vietnam.
Well, let's go back, because before people know who Larry Nichols is, I mean, you know, my audience has grown so much, and we've got so many new AM and FM stations. I'll keep you into the next hour if you have time, Larry, because I want to flesh all this out. So don't rush. Tell us, in a nutshell, the life story of Larry Nichols. Then we'll bring it up to the Clintons, and now where we are in 2008.
Oh, Lord, Alex. I was a Green Beret in Vietnam. Then we were kicked out of Vietnam for cutting up the little Vietnamese when we killed them, because when you cut them up in little pieces, they didn't get to go to Buddha heaven. And when they didn't get to go to Buddha heaven, well, then they wouldn't fight you. Well, the people didn't like that kind of rule, so they kicked us out. Then they turned and offered most of us merc work. And from there, I went to Rwanda against Idi Amin. From there to the Congo. And I guess just about every war in the world, Alex, anybody's war, I was in. And then Reagan called with a guy back during the Contras, right when Ollie North got in trouble. There was a guy named Jack Zinglob that I had worked with for years. And so, anyway, he called, and they needed a little help, so I went down there. And it was down there, Alex, that Nicaragua was different. My average soldier was 13 to 16 years old. And we were up against 500,000 Sandinos. And I mean, there you would go, but 2 hours later I'd hop on a Flying Tiger or Southern Air, and I'd be back in America. And the transition of being in battle and then being back here, that quick fried my brain. Now, I had known Bill Clinton and Hillary since I got them elected the first time. And so my parents, my family, thought it was time for me to get out of the racket of running around and fighting. And so they said, why don't you call your friend Bill Clinton and get him to give you a job?
So by fried your brain, you got what they'd call PTSD?
Yeah. And so I called Bill. Bill said, well, I got a perfect place for you. It's called the Arkansas Development Finance Authority.
And he knew you were good because, according to Terry Reed and others, Bill had been in intelligence quite a while, hadn't he?
Oh, yeah. They all knew about me. I had done a lot of dirty work here for him. I mean, anybody that got in Bill's way, we eliminated. We got rid of them.
Well, you're going far today, Larry. I mean, I've been interviewing you for like 12 years off and on. By eliminated, what would happen to them? You mean the arms, legs, head cut off, and then they'd report it was a suicide?
It depended on what they deserved. Larry Patterson, Roger Perry, and I, we would do whatever we were asked to do. Somebody got in our way. Bill screwed somebody, some farmer's daughter, and he was going to go public. He had two choices. Shut up, or, you know, hey, deal with it. So they put me at this place called the Arkansas Development Finance Authority. Nobody had ever heard of it, and I'd been around government for years. And as you remember from the Clinton Chronicles, you remember the former Supreme Court Justice Jim Johnson. What an incredible man. He testified to all of this on the Clinton Chronicles. I go there to this place thinking that they made low-interest loans to schools and churches and low-interest bond loans.
I mean, you were a killer. You've been killing for decades for this government, and you knew that people played dirty, but you still thought it was overall for something good at the end?
It's what you did for money, Alex.
So you didn't even think it was good?
I didn't care.
Well, you know what? Folks have heard the Whitewater and the rest of the story, and we're going to tell that and then get into the new, what's happening today, your bottom line on Hillary and McCain staging this whole deal. That's what's most important. And then into the Iran situation. We're really honored to have you, Larry. But then I want to talk about the mindset. Why are you doing this now? Now you come across pretty credibly, and your info's always checked out, and you've hurt the Clintons bad. I mean, if you were doing it for money and being evil before, when did you decide to be a good guy?
When I went to the Arkansas Development Finance Authority, remember, I had just been in a battle in the Bukha, right along the Rio Coco. And we had attacked the diamond mine. Adolfo Calero had sent me in to attack the diamond mine in the Bukha. And there was a little girl, about 9 years old. And in that particular battle, what would happen when a battle was coming, Alex, people, the peasants or campesinos, would move to enclaves where they'd be safe from the battles. Well, this little girl and her mother were, they didn't make it to the enclave. Well, they had a Twin 50, blew her mother into goo. And I ran and picked her up, pulled her over a log, and told her she'd be okay. And I was looking at the little girl, and I looked down, and her eyes went cold, and her bottom half had been blown off. And Alex, I had a daughter, Chelsea. Chelsea and Beth played together. I mean, they were the same age as this little girl. And my brain fried. I mean, I went nuts. So I came back. I go to this place called the Arkansas Development Finance Authority, right? Thinking I'm going to be the marketing director. Lo and behold, what do I find out? Adolfo Calero calls me, and you remember who Adolfo, the big guy with Ronald Reagan, the big white-haired guy, the head of the Contras. He called me and he said, "We've got a problem." I said, "What is it?" He said, "We're hearing that we're smuggling cocaine through a place called Mena, Arkansas." I said, "Well, that's nuts." He said, "Well, would you go down and check it out?" Well, I ran with Bill Clinton, Dan Laster, Webb Hubble. I mean, you name them, we were all buddies. And come to find out, Dan Laster was running with Barry Seal $100 million a month in cocaine through this little airport called Mena. which was a refurbishing center for the CIA, where they changed out planes from one theater to another. And, Alex, it was that day when I went home, cried like a baby, and I thought, what if Beth got hooked on cocaine? How could I live with myself? And that's when I made my mistake. I went to Bill Clinton, told Bill what I had found out, that he had made a mistake. Now, I didn't know. See, Jack Stevens was my mentor. I mean, he had picked me up.
Larry, stay there. We got to go to break. We'll come right back with this. We're going to go through the history of the Clintons, and then you always said she'd be president. I remember in 2000, you said, watch, 2008. And, again, Larry Nichols is who he says he is. It's all been vetted by the national media, CIA, the whole nine yards, CIA commando. And I've heard the story so many times from special forces colonels and the rest of it. It's the murdering children that changes them. Larry Nichols is our guest. He's the guy that brought out all the big scandals on the Clintons. He knows them like the back of his hand. The mainstream media, from 60 Minutes to CBS, CNN, they've all gone over him with a fine-tooth comb. And it's all checked out. We've interviewed many others, like Terry Reed, who was also at MENA witnessing the cocaine and was CIA, and he just said, look, I'm not going to be part of putting this stuff on the streets. A lot of people said no, but I just wanted to make that clear for folks that everything Larry Nichols is telling you is documented. Larry, continue.
Well, as a matter of fact, if you go to Terry Reed's book, he writes in his book when he and I finally met that he had never looked in the eyes of such a cold-blooded killer. Now, folks, if you think I'm here telling you I'm a good guy, you bad wrong. There ain't nothing I haven't done twice. So do you understand that? But when I found out that they were smuggling cocaine, I went to Bill, and I said, Bill, you're smuggling cocaine, and I can't have any part of that. You made a mistake about me. I'll do anything. I'll beat people up, break their arms or their legs, whatever. But I will not participate in trafficking cocaine. And that's when I got Dan Lester and Bill Clinton's brother put in prison. My mentor, Jack Stevens, I thought would protect me. I did not know that Jack Stevens and his brother, Whit Stevens, were the head of the Dixie Mafia. So all this time, Alex, I had been working for the mob and didn't even know it.
Well, the Dixie Mafia is bigger than La Cosa Nostra in the U.S., and they keep it very quiet, don't they?
Well, you ask anybody that you know in law enforcement. Pick any mob group you want to know, and they'll tell you there is no more vicious, dangerous group than the Dixie Mafia. Well, here I go, and I come out, and I tell Boo, you got 2 weeks to tell the truth, or I will. Next thing I know, I read in the paper. Then I find out my dad's dying of cancer. Well, then it comes out in the paper that a state employee, this is all documented, folks, a state employee was fighting for the Contras. And for 6 months, the media just had a field day with me.
So they were destroying your character.
Destroying my character, which I deserved.
And blowing your cover.
Blowing it. Hey, look, I deserved it. I deserve everything I get. January the 16th, 1989, I was sitting in the chair I'm sitting in right now. Daddy was dying of lung cancer. People would walk plumb across the other side of the street in this town to not even have to be near me. The neighbors wouldn't let their children play with my daughter. See, they thought I was a mild-mannered businessman. And I reached out, touched the floor, and I said, God, didn't get any lower than I am. So, you know, I'm at the bottom. I don't know what to do. Now, I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to tell any of you, you know, he burned the bush. Matter of fact, I wanted him to run something across screen, you know, scroll something across the bottom of the screen telling me what to do. He didn't. The next morning, I woke up and I knew what to do. And that was to tell the truth. But now to fight them, you had to be careful because these people would kill you. You know, I lost 52 witnesses that I had scheduled to testify to Ken Starr and to all the others that died of suicides, shot themselves in the back of the head with 30-inch shotguns. And so what I did, there was one thing I knew about that everybody in Arkansas knew about, but nobody knew about it like I did because I had had to cover it up so much. And that was Bill with his women. And I knew he was running for president. So I knew if I could just stay alive, Alex, if I could keep the mob from killing me until he announced he was running for president, then the national media would just swarm in here. And, man, I'd just show them all the women that he'd been screwing. You know, because remember of old Hart, Gary Hart, and it'd be over.
Larry Nichols, stay there. Long segment coming up. I'm going to bring it up to date, the whole history, and then up to date. He'll be with us into the next hour. Larry Nichols joins us from Arkansas. He's the guy that blew open Whitewater, Sexgate, all of it. The Clinton Chronicles and other films. People that would see Clinton with Jennifer Flowers would have their legs and arms broken by the state troopers. The Clinton death list began to rise. We've gotten up to that point, Larry Nichols. Continue, please.
Well, so I stayed alive, kept it going. He announced, so I bricked Jennifer Flowers. Well, nobody believed me. They had already used the Stevens. You see, back then, Alex, people didn't believe that the media, the national media, was controlled in those days by about 50 different corporations. Now it's 5. They had already gotten to them. And so the national media would come in, check me out like a, you know, like whatever. Then they'd find out it's true. The reporters would go back just with stories they could not believe, and the editors would spike them. Would let them run. Well, then there was a guy from Star Magazine, Stephen Edwards, left a little card in my mailbox. He said, I believe there's more to your story than what's been told. And so that's when it started. I told him the story. We broke it in Star Magazine. They denied it. Now, most of y'all will remember this. To show you how far back I go. It was during the Super Bowl. And I was there with Steve Croft. And there was Bill and Hillary during the Super Bowl. And that was when Hillary said she wasn't just baking cookies like, you know, Tammy Wynette. But they denied Jennifer Flowers. Well, then I broke the story about Paul Jones. Well, nobody believed that. Well, then I met Alex Jones, and I met talk radio. Nobody would touch me. And all of a sudden, talk radio started picking up on it, saying, my God, this, can you prove this? Can you prove this? Alex, you remember a reporter from Great Britain. His name was Ambrose Evans Pritchard. He had chased me all over the world trying to catch me. And Ambrose started breaking the stories. Well, then I broke Whitewater. Then I broke Filegate. Well, to fight the Clintons, you had to know them. Now, folks, I'm telling you all this history, thanks to Alex, so that you understand I know how to beat them. I know how to beat them because I designed the campaign they're running right now. We did it in 1986, little Dickie Morris and I. We designed this campaign. Exactly what they're doing. But we kept going. We kept going and kept going. And then finally, I had Mike Isikoff, who was with the Washington Post. And I had found out by this cook named Chuck about this girl named Monica Lewinsky. This little blue dress. And he had taken it to the cleaners. Well, I had paid him $50, and I got the dress. And that's when the Lewinsky scandal came out. But to get to Bill Clinton, the problem was, you got to go through his men. Now, what y'all don't know about Hillary, Alex, what you don't know about Hillary, you know why Bill married her?
Why?
Her father, Hugh Rodham, was the head of the mob in Chicago. He had a partner named Dan Rostenkowski. And it just so happened that Dan Rostenkowski happened to be the head of the most powerful House Ways and Means Committee in Washington.
Larry, your phone's ruffling. Can you get it up close to your mouth?
All right. He was the head of the House Ways and Means Committee.
And he later did have to leave because of corruption scandals, bribery.
Well, yeah, I put him in prison for 2 years. Well, then they appointed Webb Hubbell to Attorney General, because everybody else they'd appoint to Attorney General, they knew I'd get, because I'd already put Jim Guy Tucker in prison in Arkansas. But then I got Webb Hubbell, put him in prison.
Now let's go back, though. Let's talk about the Vince Foster murder. Let's talk about the Clinton death list.
Well, I'll get to that. So we leveled the playing field. Now the Clintons are vulnerable, all right? Now they're vulnerable. There was a guy named Jerry Sieper from the Washington Times. And I had a story where I had caught Vince and Hillary screwing. I had bugged the governor's mansion with the full intention of catching Bill screwing Miss Arkansas. Well, that night, he kind of shafted us, and he went to another house, and Vince came over to Hillary's, to the mansion. And so I had this tape. Well, I played it for Jerry Sieper. Now, at that time, I had nothing against Hillary. You know, my feud was with Bill Clinton. You and I talked about it a lot. Vince thought that tape was fixing to be aired in the Washington Times. Now, folks, I have no idea. I have no idea somebody killed Vince Foster if he killed himself. But from the stuff that I got from Starr, Ken Starr, because I had more information than anybody else, the autopsy was obvious. He didn't die in Fort Marcy Park. And if he didn't die in Fort Marcy Park, then somebody moved the body.
And then we have Hillary with the all-night cleaning crew doing all the carpets. And we have it being a different caliber gun left at the scene than what shot him in the back of the head. All of that.
Well, you got another little problem. Hillary was in California, and when she found out, she supposedly flew back to Washington to be with Vince's wife, right? Well, I actually have the fuel certificate from Central Flying Service. She flew back to Arkansas, and I actually took Jerry Sieper to the Rose Law Firm and caught two guys taking boxes marked VF to be burned. We caught them. We got them. And that's why I've said to people, Hillary's gonna make it. Let me just tell y'all now, we're reliving 94. Remember when all the stuff with Bill hit? And remember, Alex, when all of the Republicans, all they did was just morph the long incumbent Democrat head into Bill Clinton, and then they won, and the Republicans took control of both houses?
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
There was no way that year, no way Bill Clinton could have won again as president, except for one thing, Bob Dole.
Yeah, they ran a weak candidate against him.
Now you see John McCain. Now, folks, the thing that you need to be the most afraid of, and you better be afraid, Bill Clinton is an inch deep and a mile wide. He's just a good timer, just a good old boy. He didn't believe in anything. Didn't care about nothing except women, drugs. That's all he cared about. But now, when I met Hillary, I met her. She was wearing muumuu, horn-rimmed glasses, had not taken a bath, did not shave underarms or her legs, wearing sandals, and was carrying a card saying she was a proud member of the United States American Communist Party. She believes what she believes. She is what she is. And it was all scheduled that Bill would run, they would wait, and then she would run. Now, somehow Bush ended up in there that second term, but that was over the war. But where everybody gets confused, Alex, is a group that we used to call the Puppet Masters. I've been a part of destroying more countries than most of y'all even know ever even existed. And these puppet masters control everything. How do you think the Clintons come up with all this money? And who do you think controls the war in Iraq? Maliki has asked Bush twice to leave. Leave. They've got security under control. My God, that's the third richest oil reserve in the world. They've got the fighting among the factions stopped. But we ain't leaving. We ain't leaving.
Larry Nichols, stop right there because there's so much I want to go over with you. We know that Oklahoma City was a staged event. We know 9/11 was a staged event. We know that no matter what party it is, they keep building up the secret police apparatus. You, like E. Howard Hunt, have the job of overthrowing nations and running black ops squads, and you know, very similar type background, coming out of special forces and then into the intelligence, and you know, being a boots on the ground commander. Here, it's like a slow-motion 30-year takeover instead of a one-week takeover like Guatemala or Nicaragua or El Salvador or Iran. They're building camps. They admit it. They've militarized the police. They've tripled the number of cops. They're brainwashing everybody. They're putting up cameras, coming in with national ID cards. I want to go over their global geopolitical plan. You talked to the Iranian prime minister.
Iraqi
prime minister. Excuse me. Last letter different. I tend to get that wrong. You talked to the Iraqi prime minister.
I've talked to him in his eye.
Okay, but let's just stop right there. Well, I know you talked to the Iranians and the Iraqis. That's what I've seen in the press reports. But let's just back up here before I get into that. And before you get into that, what will happen? What do you predict? Because you predicted it in the past. Everything you said came true. I think Hillary will have an inaugural terror attack to make us all love her and to be able to really launch martial law. They won't call it that. I know they've recruited 26,000 preachers to tell their flocks to turn their guns in, go to FEMA camps, take inoculations. I reported that over a year with the secret documents we got before it even broke in the news. It's now come out in the news. What do you see happening if and when the fix is in, Hillary Clinton becomes president?
Well, the first thing you got to understand that you got to learn is a thing called social engineering. It's one of the first things we were trained. Social engineering. Y'all being socially engineered, you think you're voting for president. You're not. You're not going to pick who's president. Others are. But the way they're going to get us, Alex, they're doing right now. They're taking American jobs. There's an invasion. My God, man. You were talking before, while I was in the bullpen, you were talking about the pseudoephedrine. Well, they don't even have to worry about that now. Now they got more of crack cocaine coming across the border than you can make here. They're bringing people in, replacing American jobs. When Americans lose their jobs, what do you lose? You lose your home. When you lose your home, what do you lose? Your family.
You lose your independence, and then they can come in with government jobs.
You end up, what? There's a term that they use in social engineering. It's called empowerment.
Disempowerment.
Huh?
They want to disempower the people.
Right, because if you're empowered, you have enough money to control your own life and make your own decisions.
They're always waging war against the middle class.
And they're stripping us down. And we don't have 2 years. This thing's over in 2 years, buddy.
I agree. We'll be in total martial law.
Yeah, I mean, and what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Who are you going to call? Who are you going to go to? There's one way to beat them. There's one way to beat him.
I want to get into your solution, but fleshing out the type of individual that Hillary and the puppet masters that control her are, the puppeteers, predict, if she gets in, then we'll talk about trying to stop her, but if she gets in, what do you predict she'll do?
Well, the first thing she'll do is she'll carry on, and you'll know no difference between George Bush and his administration and the Clinton administration. You'll see none. Look, does it not make sense to you that since the day the statue of Hussein fell in Iran, in Iraq, that the oil companies have made the largest quarterly profits in the history of the world? I mean, does that not make some sense to somebody?
By shutting off the oil supply, they create artificial scarcity.
Now, nothing's going to change. Nothing is going to change. The only difference is Hillary will be the boss. Now, when Hillary gets to be the boss, we're going to go back to the old Clinton days in Arkansas. You cross them, they'll kill you.
You know, I've noticed with Bush, he tends to just let people run around and attack him. He's got the hubris to ignore it. But the Clintons, they pay attention. They like to kill hundreds, don't they?
I guarantee Bush will just let you run around and say what you want to. He doesn't care. You cross Hillary, and you'll not live to see tomorrow. And then they'll do what we're trained to do, get you when you're young. See, if they think you're about to start talking bad about them, you're going to have a car wreck.
Well, that's why Jennifer Flowers was on Hardball, 8 years ago, and he said, well, so you're saying Bill Clinton's killing people? And she said, yeah, they've killed over 100 people. Clinton deathless. He said, well, why are you still alive? And she said, because I'm talking.
She's alive because of one thing, and she will tell you. Because she hated me for a week or two. But she'll tell you today that the reason she's alive is because I made her come out and talk. Susan Coleman, I had her fixing to come out. And she waited a week, and they killed her.
Let's talk about how they killed her when we get back. Talk about how to stop the Clintonistas with our guest, Larry Nichols, former CIA Black Op commander. Larry Nichols is our guest. He broke the first big Clinton scandals and many of the others. They haven't killed him because he's so prominent, isn't they? Haven't tried as well. You know, so many dumb liberals think that they are just so sweet and kind and loving. I mean, you've been there. It's even mainstream knowledge they have a lot of people killed. Tell us about this poor young lady.
Well, Susan Coleman worked as the nanny at the governor's mansion. And Bill Clinton raped her twice. And I got her to come out, Chris Ruddy. If you'll remember Chris Ruddy, he was with the Pittsburgh Tribune at the time. I had her fix him to come out. And she was going to come out that Friday. She backed out. Well, that weekend, they found her dead. Now, somehow she had taken a 380, shot herself in the back of the head, and killed herself. Well, when we broke into her apartment, she shot herself, supposedly. Just imagine this. She shot herself in the right temple. You with me? Sitting on a couch. To the left of the couch was the wall between the living room and the kitchen and the apartment, right? Where would that bullet end up?
Tell us.
Would end up in that wall right there to the left of the couch, wouldn't it?
Yes.
We found the bullet up in the ceiling, 13 feet to the right. Into the front of her. Well, then I find five nurses that worked with her, that they had done such a poor makeup job that when they went to the morgue, they didn't want the family to see her because she was such a pretty girl. So they asked the mortician to let them help do some makeup. Well, they found out that her whole forehead, her right forehead, had been made up with cake powder. She had been killed. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, she had been killed. That's just the cost of doing business.
Now, it later came out other women he'd raped. How often? I mean, did he always like to rape them and bite them and all the things he did?
Well, what was the other one? The one in Fort Smith that he raped and beat up. Oh, my goodness. Alex, there's so many. It's hard for me to remember all of them. I mean, you just...
And it's like a bad nightmare. People thought the Clintons were gone. You kept saying they're not gone.
They're not gone?
Well, no.
What do you think they've been doing all these years? They've been getting ready for this day. These people do not live. They're not like me. I mean, they're not like you. They're like me. I don't live for today. By the time today gets here, guess what, folks? It's over. You plan for tomorrow. And if you plan far enough in advance for tomorrow, then you line up the things that you need to happen so that what you want to happen in the future to happen. And then all you got to do is just make them happen. But you do not understand. Y'all will not understand, and it's hard for you to believe, and some of you are sitting there saying, this guy's full of crap. Is what? I don't care if you believe me. Look, half the world's doubted me, but they hadn't one of them proven it wrong yet.
Well, Mitt Romney just dropped out, so like we said, it's going to be McCain and Hillary, and they're two peas in a pod. Let's talk about your ideas of how to stop them on the other side. Remember, when Bush first got in office, he blocked Congressman Dan Burton's committee from investigating Pardongate and all the cocaine dealers and people that they had pardoned. So it's all a big intelligence op for the puppet masters, and Hillary is their girl. We'll be right back. We're talking about the Clintons, their crimes, who they work for, the activities they're going to carry out. Larry, so many conservatives were against Clinton. And they were against everything communist. Now they're not worried about communists. They're worried about the Muslim extremists, which we all know our government runs and controls. And so many conservatives now are emailing me, calling me, saying, look, I don't care. I support Hillary. A bunch of national talk show hosts, Republicans, have been endorsing Hillary. We've had Ann Coulter saying she's for Hillary. Quote, she's our girl. It's come out that Fox News has covertly been raising money for and advising her. The White House, they admit, has, quote, been helping write her speeches. I told people about this years ago. Now it's out. We know they're intelligence operatives at a level way above what you are at. We know that's why they recruited you. And then you saw their narcotics trafficking and wouldn't go along with it. What do you say to Ann Coulter? What do you say to all these big former neocons who are now saying, we support Clinton? I mean, that shows you that's who's going to be president. They're now all bowing down to her, and it shows the fix was in as soon as she got into the Senate. I mean, what do you say to those mainline conservatives right now that are starting to support Hillary?
Who's you, Alex? But what makes us believe that there have been two parties? What?
I know there hasn't been since they blew Kennedy's head off in 63.
Yeah. I mean, these people are going to do what they're told to do. Look at Bill O'Reilly. Man, when I met Bill O'Reilly, he was with Hard Copy. Now he's this media. Bill O'Reilly knows no more about the news or what's going on than my English bulldog. But the problem, folks, is this. We're under invasion. We're under full invasion. Now, you don't believe me. Let me give you a test. Now, I'm sorry, Alex, about my voice. I just spent a week on a slab in the hospital, and I just got out. I want y'all to take a test. Open your front door, get in your car, and drive. Drive by buildings that used to be big plants where Americans worked. Drive by construction sites where Americans used to lay bricks.
All you see is illegal aliens.
And all you see is illegal aliens.
It's way more than 30 million.
Yeah, yeah. There's that many in California. Y'all, we're under invasion. And once they get here, where are we going to go? What are you going to do? And once you lose your family, once you lose your money, once you lose your ability to live, you become a puppet to the government, and become a slave.
And they're going to have the welfare, and they're going to have the make-work jobs, and they're converting the universities and the scholarships over to police jobs, surveillance, homeland security. They're going to force people into this, and then Americans, whether you're white, Hispanic, black, Asian, doesn't matter, we're going to lose our standard of living, and we're all just going to be third-world slaves like they are in Mexico or Nicaragua or El Salvador.
Look, all you got to do, go to Nicaragua. I asked Adolfo Calero once. I was in Managua. Excuse me. Here were these beautiful buildings. And they were all covered in vines and just destroyed. I said, how did it happen? He said, it happened overnight.
Stay there. I want to hear about that. I want to hear about how to beat the Clintons, beat the New World Order, from your perspective, Larry Nichols. And then I want to get into talking to Ahmed Dinajid, talking to al-Maliki, and a lot more on the other side with Larry Nichols. A very important interview, ladies and gentlemen. Stay with us. All right, Larry Nichols, I want to start moving quickly with you now. You were finishing up when you were talking to one of the leaders down there. I believe you're talking about Nicaragua. Please continue.
I mean, he said it happened overnight. 1 minute, it was just a peaceful community, and next minute, Sandinistas came in, took over, and it became a puppet state. Now, folks, listen to me. If we don't talk about anything else the rest of the day, Alex, I'm counting on you. I'm counting on you, son. Hillary's mine. Ain't nobody can stop Hillary from being president but me. Nobody has the documents. Nobody has the evidence. I got it. She's either got to go over me or through me. But that ain't going to save the country. There's one thing you can do and save the country tomorrow. Save it tomorrow. And we proved it. You have proven it. When Bush was president and the Republicans were in control of both houses, they were just like little Indians. Whatever Bush wanted, they just marched in a row. it took just a little bit of a balance of power of the Democrats to take away from the Republicans. And you learned, Alex, the key to this nation, the key that our forefathers gave us. You hear me? Our forefathers, they're the ones that taught us what to do. We need citizen legislators. Folks, there has never been a time. You know, how did I beat Clinton? There was no way to beat Clinton because, I mean, he had control of everything. But I picked my time. I picked women, of all things, to attack Bill Clinton with, which would you hear if thought was the craziest thing on earth. Right now, the American people do not want Republican or Democrat. They're fed up with both. If y'all will get out and get on the ballot, don't buy yard signs, don't buy ads on TV, don't go up and down your street advertising. Just get whatever you got to do to get your name on the ballot, from dog catcher to congressman to senator, as an independent. Then what happens, Alex, is Hillary has no power. She has no power. Because we have citizen legislators there to block her.
The problem is, Larry, and they don't have the electronic, you know, fraudulent machines everywhere, but about 40% of the country now, is that the establishment, the puppet masters, as you call them, in the last 10 years have moved in with the fraudulent machines so they can organize effective fraud to keep that rebellion by the people at the ballot box from going through.
I have rigged more voting machines than most people have ever seen. I will teach you how to beat that. You don't have to do anything. All you got to be, just, you know, Joe Blow on the ballot. You know, one's Republican, one's Democrat, and then here's this guy, Joe Blow. And people say, well, what do you stand for, Joe Blow? Don't tell them. Don't tell them. Because if you tell them, Alex, you're in 40-40-20. 40-40-20 means if somebody, if you like this, somebody hates it. So you don't tell them. What difference, Alex, would it make if Al Capone were in Congress? What in God's name could he do any more to this country?
Well, Larry, let's expand on that. I think the key here is, as you said, continue to expose how they're getting rid of our sovereignty, North American Union. This is the end days for this country if we don't turn it around now. It's serfdom.
But look at the army you've got. You've got people that drive nails. They're not driving nails. Go to the look what happened in this election. This election that you just saw is proof that what I'm telling you will work. People will show up if they think they can win.
Yeah, you're talking about the 2006 election where they put Democrats in wanting change.
Yeah.
And they didn't get it, so now you think they're going to go for independent. I agree, Ron Paul needs to soon run for independent. They're talking about him winning a brokered convention. How would he win a brokered convention when he's going to get less than 10% of the vote?
He's not going to win it. It's not at the presidential level. That's
I agree. I've always said, why do we have 50-60% turnout at the national level, but then 8% on average at the local?
I tell you what Ron Paul can do. Ron Paul can go around this nation, and he can say, you, Mr. Farmer, you, Mr. Nail Driver, you, Mr. Roofer.
He's been doing that.
Get your name on the ballot.
He's been doing that.
And if we can get enough independents in Congress,
there'll be so many independents running, they can't engage in fraud everywhere and fix it.
They can't stop it. You got it.
Well,
now, Alex,
mm-hmm.
You're the only one with a voice big enough to do that, buddy.
Oh, my show's pretty good size, but I mean, it if the listeners move on ideas, it can certainly have an effect. And I think out of a toolbox of things, that's certainly there. But also what you did on talk radio, going back, you know, to 1994, 1995, 96, 97, is going out to the grassroots stations. The big ones are owned and run by the neocons, but going out to the grassroots and reminding people. I mean, people have short memories, but they remember how bad Bill Clinton is. And I don't think all the Ann Coulters and Sean Hannity's defending Hillary now and saying she's a good girl. I don't think that's going to work.
Hey, you let them mess with me. You know, I've known and Coulter. I've known Sean Hannity. Let them mess with me. Let them get me on. Do you ever see me on TV?
No.
I mean, do you not believe in a race where it's about Hillary Clinton, that the one man that did more damage to the Clintons during the entire Clinton era should at least be interviewed when they're interviewing anybody that might have ever known a shoe they ever wore?
But like you said, the establishment fixes in. We're going to have you back for a second interview, Larry, but in the time we've got left, I want to switch gears over into the cable cutting. Now it is six cables, the open buildup of troops, open discussions of attacking Iran. You've talked to the Iranian leader. You've talked to the Iraqi leader. Let's talk about again, you have these sources going back to the Mujahideen and your CIA operations there, Larry. Let's go back here first and talk about your discussions with al-Maliki.
Maliki is ready with a government that they have already formed that is set up. You see, they were running under until the 16th of last month what's called the Bremer Provisional Government. Our government gave them all these benchmarks to hit. Yeah, but do you know what the little trick was?
Tell me.
They rigged it to where they couldn't hit any of them.
Well, they want to stay there to keep the oil from flowing to keep prices up.
Right. Now, Maliki is autonomous. Iraq now is an autonomous nation.
Their puppet ceased to be a puppet. What, 6 months ago he said, I want you to leave.
And he told them, and remember what Bush said. Bush said, when y'all stand up, we'll stand down. Maliki stood up. He's standing up, but they're trying not to leave, and they're trying to start a kick fight between Iran. You know, they were saying that Iran was providing all of these weapons into Iraq, and I'm sitting here. I mean, I'm talking to them, Alex. I'm talking to them. And I go on the air, and I go, show them to me. Show us. We noticed they never showed us. They're trying to start a regional conflict. If you understand,
well, that's the old
master.
That's the 1983 Israeli plan that we've adopted. Break the place up, break each nation in 3 to 4 parts, sow sectarian violence against Shiite, Sunni, and the Kurds. And that's been the policy, and they've carried out the policy.
Well, if you understand the plan that's been around since I've been around, you control through chaos.
Order through chaos.
Yep. And so, that's why, unless we stop it, it ain't going to end.
And it's hard for black ops to build something, make something good. It's easy to destroy and get everybody killing each other.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my God. Let me ask you this. They were talking about insurgents, and I'm sitting here going, what are you talking insurgents?
And it turns out the government was funding all the sides and giving them weapons.
Well, yeah, go figure. I mean, if the Sunnis hated the Shias and the Shias hated the Sunnis and they were fighting each other, right, then why would you need an insurgent to come in and start a fight between them? They ought to do it automatically, right?
Absolutely.
It is ready. It's time. We have to stand up. We have to stand up through our people, through our voices, through our Congress, through Ron Paul.
Folks, you have to put the maximum effort out. Tell us a little bit about the work you did in Afghanistan. And when you first, when was the first time you talked to Ahmadinejad?
Well, I talked to him because they were negotiating a thing between Maliki. At that time, if you'll remember, America did not want Maliki to negotiate with Iran. And because I'm the Saladin, and I knew Sistani, I was able to help set up a negotiation.
When did you first get into Afghanistan? How long were you there?
I was there, I guess, maybe 84, 86, maybe 2 years, whatever 2 years.
What were you doing?
Killing Russians.
Were you with the teams, or were you bringing weapons in?
Well, I mean, we would run weapons across Pakistan.
On the mules?
Yeah, into the mountains in Afghanistan, and then you just sit back and shot Russians until the Russians quit. I guess it was fun. I mean, it was something to do.
Stay there. I want to talk about when you talk to Al Maliki, when you talk to Ahmed Najid. And this is amazing information. People that find all this hard to believe, everything Larry Nichols has ever told me is checked out. This is the guy who they admit brought all the big scandals on Clinton. Larry Nichols, any websites, phone numbers, contact info you want to give out for other talk show hosts that might want to interview you? Or
My number is 501-329-1159.
Well, let's give that out at the end of the interview, and I would ask listeners to not just call you because you might get 1,000 phone calls.
Let me explain to you about Iran. May I please?
Go ahead.
Because nobody does. Ahmadinejad. He's got nukes, folks. He's had them. He got them from Korea. He got them from China. He got them from Russia. He doesn't need nuclear plants to build plutonium rods to create nuclear weapons. You know what their problem is, Alex? Their oil is drying up into sludge, and they need the power. They need the power.
Well, they are building peaceful plants that have nothing to do with uranium enrichment. I don't know if they have weapons, as you say. I know that our government helped give Pakistan the weapons. Why would the U.S. help Pakistan get nukes?
Well, go figure. Look. Our job in the Middle East is to keep that place in turmoil. And as long as it's in turmoil, then there's one bunch that supposedly has the big stick that controls it all, which are the major oil companies. But let me tell you, Nuri al-Maliki ain't putting up with it anymore. He's had it. He's finished. And so he's made alliances with Iran, with Syria.
Why do you think they killed Bhutto?
Why do you think?
Well, I'm asking you, Larry.
Because they didn't want any stability. Actually, they killed her because there was a plan at the same time to kill Maliki and the rest of them.
Yeah, that's the M.O. I've got. And they machine gunned her in front of everybody and then blew her up and then said she hit her head. And then hundreds of witnesses and videos came out of it being a lie. And our media is telling us that current dictator
right
is...
on TV in front of us. Everybody just goes, okay. See, we're all looking at the Super Bowl. We're all looking at this election. What y'all better be careful of is what you're not looking at. Now, I want to say one thing very clear. I want to say it right now. If you think I'm against the American soldier, then you need to come to 58 Kensington Drive, Conway, Arkansas. Because we're going to fight. There's no better soldier. No better. No braver. But you got to understand what's happening. You got to be a soldier to understand what's happening to them. These kids are serving 2, 3, 4, 5 tours. Alex, they're coming back. Have you been standing by somebody when their head got blowed off? Have you done that?
No, I haven't.
Let me tell you, it's a pretty impressive thing.
They're feeding our troops into a meat grinder. They're keeping them in over 4 tours. That wasn't done in Vietnam, World War II. It's like...
Yeah, now, let me give you a little tip. Look at all the generals. Look at the generals. And I want you to look on their left breast. And if you don't see this long blue rifle, which is called a 90-day badge, that guy ain't ever even been in combat. We've got American soldiers right now playing chicken and egg. Can you believe that? Chicken and egg. What's chicken and egg? Let's say you and I were on one corner, all right, of a 4-way intersection, right? And we're sitting in an old building that's been blown up. We get a call from command, and you know what they tell us to do, our squad?
Talking to your phone.
They tell us to go across the street and set up perimeter at the other service station on the other side. You know why? So that when we cross, the enemy will shoot at us, and then we'll know where the enemy is, so we can shoot back at them.
Yeah, they put them in those little troop deployments for, quote, security as bait.
It's called the chicken and the egg. Why do that? What difference does that corner make than the other one? Just sit there. The bad guys will come to you. If you've been in battle, if you've been in combat, trust me, if they're bad guys, they'll come to you. They'll come to you. And then you know what you do? You kill them. Then nobody gets hurt. Everybody comes home. Our soldiers need to come home now.
But they've 70 plus percent are against the war, but they tell us they're going to stay there, showing the puppet masters on everything.